This is Radio Superior 1953, a reproduction of actual news events with authentic popular music from the 1950s. This is a true story of our past. So step back with us to another time. We bring you now inside the KUWS radio studios and the evening Gather Round show.
Come on in and gather around. Tim Michaels here. It's Friday, March 6, 1953, campers. And it's Duluth Day. Yep, we're throwing a bone to our brothers and sisters in Duluth. We've got news from Duluth and features from Duluth, cold weather from Duluth.
But we're a superior radio station. Why would we do a Duluth Day?
We have ads from Duluth.
Oh.
Lou Martin has the 6 o'clock news on this hour-long special program. Rapid Ray is in with sports. Harriet has community news. And my good friend Colonel Raffaele will stop in to talk about outlawing communists at the VFW.
I didn't know communists were a problem at the VFW.
I might have gotten that a little wrong. But the colonel will be in, and I've got the biggest story of the year.
The leader of world communism is dead.
No, our bowling team is facing the hated Colonel Raffaele's VFW Devil Dogs tonight. The 6 o'clock news is brought to you by National Food Stores, with chuck roast on sale for 39 cents a pound. Good evening, Lou.
Good evening, Tim, and good listeners. Joseph Stalin is dead, and the Kremlin is keeping silent on the heir to the Red Rule. We begin our world report from Moscow.
This is Moscow calling. Eddie Gilmore reporting. Joseph Stalin died last night behind the 12-foot-thick walls of Moscow's Kremlin. He dominated a third of the world's people as the most powerful dictator in history. The Prime Minister of the Soviet Union and the Supreme Chief of the Communist Party succumbed at 9:50 p.m., 4 days after suffering a stroke. He had been in a coma since he was stricken Sunday night. Yesterday, his 10 physicians said his heart was faltering. The broadcast of his death came at 4:07 a.m., more than 6 hours after his doctors had given up their struggle. The announcement said, quote, "The heart of the comrade, an inspired continuer of Lenin's will, the wise leader and teacher of the Communist Party and the Soviet people, Joseph Stalin, has stopped beating. The Soviet people have boundless faith in and are permeated with the deep love for their Communist Party, for they know that the supreme laws governing all the activity of the party is service in the interests of the people." End quote. The announcement was, in effect, an order of the day, reminiscent of the floridly worded statement of triumph, which were issued during World War II in Stalin's name. It declared the might of the Soviet Union is growing for a decisive rebuff to any aggressor, but insists the USSR policy is one of peace and international collaboration. There was no mention of Stalin's lieutenant. The most prominent leader of the Communist Party next to Stalin has been Gheorghe Melnikov. He keynoted the All-Party Congress last October. The Soviet regime holds sway across a sixth of the surface of the Earth, from the Baltic Sea to Bering Strait. Stalin's fatal illness became public on Wednesday, more than 2 days after he was stricken in his Kremlin apartment. The announcement issued from the Ministry of Health said Stalin had a sudden hemorrhage of the brain the night of March 1st. This paralyzed his right leg and arm. He lost consciousness. By a striking coincidence, Stalin's fatal illness came only 2 months after his regime had announced the uncovering of a plot by 9 doctors. Charges said the doctors killed A.A. Zadanov, once a Stalin-era parent, in 1948. In Moscow, this is Eddie Gilmore.
This is Kelvin Thornton on special assignment in Moscow. Joseph Stalin ruled Russia as undisputed dictator for nearly 30 years. Through communism, he extended his sway beyond the borders of the Soviet Union and its 200 million people to areas encompassing another half billion people. He reached the height of his power when he led the Soviet Union against the Nazis of Adolf Hitler and as an ally of the United States and Great Britain. He was one of the big three of the world, with Britain's Winston Churchill and America's Franklin D. Roosevelt. Stalin made a deal with Hitler in 1939, which shocked the rest of the world. The deal unleashed the war, but it granted Stalin precious time. When the Nazis struck at him, he was ready. He scorched the earth of Mother Russia. He fought so well that he punctured the myth of Nazi invincibility. At Stalingrad 10 years ago, Russians fought block by block, house by house, and room by room. There they smashed a great German army. In Russian history, Stalingrad is known as the turning point of the war. There were clouds in the bright sky of Allied cooperation. When the war ended, the wartime store of goodwill was quickly exhausted as Stalin and his men embarked on the Cold War. Poland, Romania, Bulgaria, Yugoslavia, and Albania fell to communism. Czechoslovakia toppled Greece, rocked by revolutionists directed from the Kremlin. China became red. There was blood in Malaya and in Indochina. Communists tried to pinch off Berlin with a blockade in 1948. Finally, the Western world, through the United Nations, took up arms to fight communist invaders of South Korea. But Stalin did not retreat nor give an inch. The fight goes on in Korea, as does the Cold War. His life of never-ending intrigue, ruthless ambition, and fantastic power helped shape much of the world's history. The grandson of a chattel slave, his father was a ne'er-do-well cobbler and his mother a peasant. She dedicated him to God in his childhood, but he schemed, plotted, clawed, killed, and made his way over bloody paths to the very top. He was christened Joseph Vissarionovich Djugashvili in Gori, Georgia, in the south of Russia, on December 21, 1879. When he was 15, his mother entered him in a seminary at Tiflis, entrusting him to the harsh discipline of monks. The seminary was a hotbed of revolutionary activity against the monks, against the Tsar. There he first came across the works of Karl Marx. In 1899, he was expelled. He had a withered left hand, but his right hand was strong and brutal. Soon he was hunted by the Tsar's police. Under the name of Koba, he was an organizer for the Social Democratic Party. He used Koba until the revolution of 1917, when he became Stalin. The party split into the Mensheviks and the Bolsheviks. Bolshevik meant majority, Mensheviks the minority. Brilliant Jew Leon Trotsky became spokesman for the Mensheviks, and Nikolai Lenin led the Bolsheviks. In 1922, Lenin suffered two strokes. He lingered until January 21, 1924. Maneuvering for power had been going on through Lenin's illness. Lenin had sharply criticized Stalin, but Stalin wrote it out and fought Trotsky. Stalin won, but Trotsky hung on in the Politburo until October 1926, when he was expelled. Slowly but ruthlessly, he consolidated. He became the most powerful dictator the world has ever known. In Moscow, this is Calvin Cook.
This is William L. Ryan, overseas AP news analyst in Bonn. The Russian people are without the little father they seem to need in the Kremlin. The tenor of the announcement about Soviet Prime Minister Stalin's fatal illness suggests that a new ruler, or perhaps a junta, already is in control, but that there is a genuine feeling of fear at top levels. If Stalin's stroke was sudden, it called for swift measures. Repeated references in the announcement call for the public to rally around the Communist Party and the Soviet state. This in itself seems significant. The Communist Party runs the government, and as far as Westerners have been able to make out, the party is ruled by Georgi Malenkov, Stalin's ambitious shadow. Suddenly, Stalin's health, once the most secret of state secrets, became a matter of public pronouncement. The smallest details of his pulse, temperature, and breathing became public. Even without the stroke Stalin suffered, the USSR seemed destined for some sort of convulsion at the top. The purge of doctors, the anti-Zionist campaign, the announcement of plots galore all indicated a struggle for power was on. Those around Stalin may have been aware the old man's days were numbered. Is a junta by Malenkov, police chief Lavrenty Beria, and deputy prime minister Vyacheslav Molotov, Stalin's old but not much respected sidekick, ruling now? Beria recently came under criticism. Lack of vigilance of his security organ was responsible for the doctor's plot, reportedly sponsored by Jews, to kill off Soviet leaders. The sudden appearance of a new minister of health also suggests the purge already was in full swing in high places, with the defections of many Soviet doctors. In circumstances of suspicion and intrigue, Stalin suddenly collapsed. The person in the best position to act swiftly in such a situation would be the one closest to Stalin and the one who controls the party. Once again, Malenkov. Throughout all the announcements is the suggestion of fear of what might happen next. The Soviet Union has been under one-man rule more than a quarter century. Stalin has been deified by the party. Nobody could have been built up to rival him while he lived. In a situation of this sort, the army is a latent power to be watched. In Bonn, West Germany, this is William L. Ryan.
Jack Bell here at the United Nations in New York. Three top-ranking delegates of the British Commonwealth served notice in the UN Political Committee that the next move for peace in Korea is up to the communists. They urged the UN to stand firm on India's resolution approved last year for the voluntary repatriation of prisoners. Stalin's fatal illness finally came up when Evaristo Surdas of Colombia said he, as a Christian man, had the sincerest good wishes. He added, however, that Stalin never carried out his promises for peace, and one of those promises was the unification of Korea. Sir Gladwin Jebb of Britain told the political committee he had decided this is not the time for such an extensive debate on Korea. Jebb repeated the Western position on Korea. Quote, sure in the knowledge that aggression in Korea has been repelled, we must continue to stand on the various offers for an honorable armistice already made in the hope that our opponents will one day see the light and agree to cease fighting on honorable terms. End quote. At the United Nations in New York, this is Jack Bell.
Ray Tucker in Washington. General James Van Fleet told Congress today that American troops in Korea have a serious shortage of ammunition, including hand grenades needed for close-in fighting on the battlefield. Democratic Senator Byrd of Virginia promptly dispatched an urgent message to Secretary of Defense Charles Wilson demanding that the Pentagon punish officials responsible for what he termed this criminal inefficiency. Secretary Wilson's office says he is already giving urgent attention to the shortage of ammunition. Bristling with anger, Byrd told newsmen that in all his 20 years in the Senate, he had never been more shocked than he was by testimony given by the former commander of UN forces in Korea at a closed-door session of the Senate Armed Forces Committee. Quoting Byrd, General Van Fleet testified this shortage of ammunition has been continuous since he took command, and that almost daily he had reported it. Van Fleet said failure to supply munitions seriously handicapped the prosecution of the war against communist Chinese and North Koreans, but also the protection of our own troops, unquote. The Virginia senator's outburst came after Van Fleet had testified that the Pentagon not only failed to fulfill promises to beef up U.S. armed forces in Korea, but left him critically short of ammunition for guns firing on the enemy. The four-star general caused a stir with several jabs at the military high command. He says he deliberately ignored Pentagon planners in building up the Republic of Korea Army to its present strength of 14 infantry divisions, with the training program now six times the size originally authorized. Van Fleet indicated that he acted on his own initiative, going beyond the scope of Pentagon planning many months ago, before President Eisenhower advocated strengthening the Korean army to relieve American troops from combat. While Van Fleet testified on Capitol Hill, renewing his call for an all-out military victory in Korea, President Eisenhower rejected Van Fleet's recommendation for an extension of the present two-year draft term. The president had no comment on Van Fleet's statement that the Korean battle situation is a sit-down of our own choice, not a stalemate. Summing up his views on the long stalemated war, Van Fleet told the Senate committee that anything short of a total Allied victory in Korea would be a defeat and would mean the eventual loss of all Asia to the communists. And if a truce is reached, lowering an iron curtain across the middle of Korea, the general said the communists would soon overrun South Korea and all we would be doing is postponing trouble. In Washington, this is Ray Tucker.
Hello, this is Max Jordan on the front lines with United Nations forces in the ROK. U.S. planes blasted the vital communist East Coast port of Chongjin yesterday in a record long-distance attack for jet-driven fighter bombers. F-15 F-84 Thunder jets flew a 700-mile round trip and rained bombs into supply buildings only 55 miles from the Russian border. The attack was one of many by ground and carrier-based planes that spread destruction throughout North Korea. Planes from the USS Oriskany roared within 50 miles of Manchuria to pound lead and zinc mines at Kumdok, northwest of Songjin. Fighter bombers from the Valley Forge showered 100,000 pounds of bombs on a hydroelectric plant at the Shouzin Reservoir, scene of the U.S. Marines' historic withdrawal in the winter of 1950. South Korean infantrymen took the spotlight in ground action with a surprise attack on a Chinese outpost at Rocky Point in the Sniper Ridge sector of the Central Front. In the ROK, this is Max Jordan.
President Eisenhower cleared the decks today for ousting several hundred holdover Democrats from government jobs. Eisenhower directed an executive order to provide the heads of agencies with greater freedom in determining who should occupy jobs now under civil service protection. White House Press Secretary James Hegarty says this would make it possible to fire the present job holders, holdovers from the Truman and Roosevelt administrations. Prime Minister Winston Churchill called today for a record peacetime budget, laying before Parliament a defense program of $4.6 billion. The Prime Minister says the arms are essential in this testing time for the free world. Taking a look at the Cold War, Churchill told the House of Commons, and we quote, "What we are faced with is not a violent jerk, but a prolonged pull," unquote. Britain has 880,000 men in active service. KUWS Radio News Time is 6:08. Tim Michaels has this message from National Food Stores.
Boy, has National Food Stores got some deals for you on meat. You can get yourself quarter beef on sale, front quarters 39 cents, hind quarters at only 49 cents a pound. Plus, listen to this, pork roast, Boston butt 45 cents a pound, cut up fryers $1.39 a pound for a 2-pound package, plus Swift Premium skinless wieners, a 1-pound package 47 cents, and Elliott's golden grain sliced bacon only 49 cents. And here's a little something extra for you. They're giving away beautiful, lovable dolls. Now, these dolls are $1 each with purchase of $5 or more, so save your cash receipts. Make sure you take advantage of these great meat specials today at National Food Stores. All stores open Friday till 9 p.m. Convenient customer parking at all stores, downtown, and west end parking at the rear of the store. Lou?
A cave-in at an Iron Range mine has killed two in Gilbert. KUWS radio newsman Mike Simonson's on the phone with the latest. Good evening, Mike.
Good evening, Lou. Two men were killed, another narrowly escaped death last night at a cave-in at a mine operated by Peter Kuwet Sons and Company here. Dead are 35-year-old David Rosenkranz of Roseau and Joe Scarians of McKinley. 24-year-old Frank Alexander of Eveleth was buried up to his neck in debris but escaped unharmed. Rosenkranz had been hired only 2 days ago. The accident happened during a change in shifts. Louis Arco of Gilbert was in the cab of a power crane, and Alexander, his oiler, was about to leave when Rosenkranz and Skierjans approached the crane. A wall of clay and sand 75 feet high and 100 feet wide collapsed, and Rosenkranz, Skierjans, and Alexander tried to run. Two shifts of workers came to help. Seeing Alexander buried, they asked him where the other men were. He said, "There's someone under me. I can feel him with my foot." Deputy County Coroner Dr. J.A. Malmstrom says Rosenkranz died of suffocation and crushing. St. Louis County Mine Inspector Ben Kengis says the cave-in was probably due to water soaking through the soil, which loosened and collapsed. Skierjans is survived by his wife, who's expecting a fourth child. Rosenkranz was rooming in Bowabic. His body is at the Crone and Nelson Funeral Home in Eveleth. Lou?
The University of Minnesota has fired Scientist X. He was convicted of perjury after denying that he was a communist. Bruce McDonald has the story from Minneapolis.
The University of Minnesota says it will not rehire Dr. Joseph Weinberg, so-called Scientist X, who was acquitted of federal perjury charges in denying he was a communist. University President James Morrill says Weinberg was not fired from his post in the physics department on the basis of charges of perjury or Communist Party membership. Morrill says the termination was based upon his refusal to cooperate with a federal grand jury by declining to give testimony. The charge is an outgrowth of Weinberg's 1949 testimony before the House Un-American Activities Committee, which accused him of giving atomic secrets to Red Spies while employed at the radiation laboratory at the University of California at Berkeley. Before revealing his real identity, the committee had referred to the 35-year-old scientist as Scientist X. In Minneapolis, this is Bruce MacDonald.
A proposal to have the woodland area sprayed by plane to eliminate tent caterpillars was adopted by the Woodland Community Club last night at the Cobb School. The Duluth Parks Department, Gus Johnson, says the city plans to spray parks and boulevards as far as it's financially possible. The Park Point Community Club already has adopted plans to have Park Point sprayed. Tim?
Hey. Man, I hate those creepy, crawly fat worms. They'd be all over the place, too. I mean, you can't walk anywhere or drive anywhere without squishing them. Of course, they make picnics more interesting and delicious.
That's disgusting.
Lou Martin, or Newsman X, as we like to call him. The forecast for this Friday, March 6, 1953. The sun plans a chilly smile on us tomorrow. Clear tonight with low of 5 and a tad warmer tomorrow with a high of 22. Well, let's start things off with Patty Page and Old Cape Cod on the Tim Michaels Gather Round Show.
If you're fond of sand dunes and salty air, quaint little villages here and there, you're sure to fall in love with Old Cape Cod. If you like the taste of a lobster stew, served by a window with an ocean view, you're sure to fall in love with Old Cape Cod. Winding roads that seem to beckon you, miles of green beneath the skies of blue, church bells chiming on a Sunday morn remind you of the town where you were born. If you spend an evening you want to stay, watching the moonlight on Cape Cod Bay, you're sure to fall in love with Old Cape Cod. Oh, if you spend an evening you want to stay
on Cape Cod Bay,
watching the moonlight on Cape Cod Bay, you're sure to fall in love with Old Cape Cod. You're sure to fall in love. You're sure to fall in love with Old Cape Cod.
All right, Patty Page and Old Cape Cod on KUWS. Hey, it's Peter Mackey, my favorite sales manager.
And you're my favorite disc spinner. Hey, you like this Duluth Day thing?
Great idea, if it'll help pay the light bill.
You bet your bottom dollar it will.
Hey, you see the big news in the paper this afternoon?
You bet your bottom dollar I did. The Duluth Herald is going to start carrying Joe Palooka next week.
Ham Fisher's lovable heavyweight champ of the comic.
Along with Palooka Joe's bride, Ann, and his manager, Nobby.
And this is even better. The Herald is also going to start the Heart of Julia Jones.
Julia Jones has everything. Good looks.
A good mind.
And a good heart.
So who can explain her failure to find love and happiness?
I can't. Well, I'm heading to the bowling alley to root the guys on. Can you believe it?
It's great.
You bet your bottom dollar. See you in the funny paper.
What a guy.
I can't believe two men have conversations like that. The heart of Juliet Jones.
Don't you just hate her selfish sister Eve?
She's wild and reckless and interested in no one but herself.
I thought you didn't read Juliet Jones. Okay, campers, let's give a listen to Johnny Ray and his hit Walking in the Rain on the Gather Round Show.
Just walking in the rain, getting soaking wet, torture in my heart. By trying to forget, just walking in the rain, so alone and blue, all because my heart still remembers you. Change. Somehow I can't forget.
Just walking in the rain. Walking in the rain. Walking in the rain.
Shake their heads in sorrow, saying, who can that fool be?
Now who can he be?
Just walking in the rain,
walking in the rain,
thinking how we've met,
walking in the rain,
knowing things have changed,
walking in the rain.
Somehow I can't forget.
Johnny Ray and Walking in the Rain on KUWS. This Gather Round break on Duluth Day is from Hub Clothing of Duluth. Hub Clothing is having an emergency sellout sale tonight and tomorrow with prices 35%, 50%, even 60% off, like boys' union suits. Normally $1.65, only 99 cents. Lou?
On this historic day, March the 6th, 1953, when perhaps the most powerful man ever alive has died, we have a history of his life. Joseph Stalin was born Joseph Dokhtchili.
How do you spell that?
I'm having enough trouble saying it. He was born on December the 21st, 1879, in southeastern Russia. By 1902, his activism for communism and against the Tsar had him exiled to Siberia. In 1904, he escaped from Siberia and a year later met Vladimir Lenin. In 1907, he met Leon Trotsky. In that same year, organized a holdup of the Bank of Tiflis, where millions of rubles were taken for the Communist Party. In 1908, he was arrested again and forced to run through a gauntlet of soldiers who beat him with rifle butts.
Hub Clothing Company also has men's cotton rib union suits for just $1.99. Men's slacks selling for $3.99, $5.99, and $7.99. And men's all-leather jackets, full lining. You better hurry for this, only $7.99. at Hub Clothing Emergency Sellout Sale in Duluth's West End. Back to you, Lou.
Whether or not you agree with Stalin's politics, it still seems impolite to interrupt a man's life history with a sale for union suits.
And real nice leather jackets, I might add.
In 1911, Stalin was selected for the first major position in the Communist Party by Lenin. In 1912, along with Molotov, Stalin founded the party newspaper Pravda. In 1913, he began another exile in Siberia, but he returned in 1917 to join the Bolshevik Revolution to overthrow the Tsar. In 1922, he became General Secretary of the Communist Party. In 1924, Lenin dies. And he's part of the struggle to succeed Lenin, which he achieved by 1927 with purges and exiles of political opponents.
Hey, get boys' longy pants for just $1.39 and boys' cotton lace double knee breeches for 99 cents at Hub Clothing Company.
Real nice flow to this. In 1937, Stalin had another great purge of political and military leaders. In 1939, he signed a non-aggression pact with Nazi Germany, enabling World War II to begin. Later that year, he attacked Finland. In 1941, Nazi forces attacked the Soviet Union, which nearly destroyed his country. In 1943, he attended the Tehran Conference with Roosevelt and Churchill. In 1945, the Big Three met at Yalta and Potsdam. In 1946, he consolidated control over Eastern Europe. In 1950, he signed a pact with Red China and Mao Zedong. After President Eisenhower was elected, he expressed interest in meeting with him. In January, he made his last public appearance at the Bolshoi Theater.
Final price matches now at Hub Clothing. 25 years in Duluth at 2005 West Superior Street. Well, I think that went well. Colonel Raffley is coming in next with something new from the Duluth VFW and Communists there. Now, a toe twinkler from the Four Preps in 26 Miles, Santa Catalina, on the Tim Michaels Gather Around Show.
26 miles across the sea. Santa Catalina is waiting for me. Santa Catalina, the island of romance, 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 romance. Water all around it, everywhere. Tropical trees and the salty air. But for me, the thing that's waiting there, romance. It seems so distant. 26 miles away, resting in the water so mean. I'd work for anyone, even the Navy, who would float me to my island dream. 26 miles so near yet far, I'd swim with just some water wings and my guitar. I could leave the wings, but I'll need the guitar for romance, 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 romance. 26 miles across the sea, Santa Catalina is waiting for me. Santa Catalina, the island of romance. A tropical heaven out in the ocean, covered with tropics and earth. If I have to swim, I'll do it forever, till I'm gazing on those island pearls. 40 kilometers in a leaky old boat. Any old thing that'll stay afloat. When we arrive, we'll all promote romance, 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 romance. 26 miles across the sea, Santa Catalina is waiting for me. Santa Catalina, the island of romance.
The Four Preps and 26 Miles Santa Catalina on KUWS.
Look, McDougal, I'm in a hurry. I've got two real important things going on at the same time.
It's go, 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 go time
there
all the time,
isn't
it, Colonel?
Enough time in the day.
Those commies really keep you busy.
The commies aren't so bad. It's those pinkos that keep us hopping. They never give a guy a moment's rest. You've got to harass this one, blacklist that one, ostracize another one. I never get to take a walk in the park anymore, or feed the birds, or rub Mrs. Rapley's corns. Well, actually, that's one thing I've got the Pinkos to thank for. But anyhow, we had a real bigwig at the Duluth Napoleon Dufresne VFW post last night. Yeah, big news about our fight to stop the Red Menace from infiltrating our great country. None other than Wayne E. Richards, Arkansas City Veterans of Foreign Wars Senior Vice Commander-in-Chief himself, gave the talk. I gotta tell you, it was inspirational, McDougal.
Nothing like commie bashing over a few beers.
That's a great combination. Throwing some peanuts in the shell and, yeah, you never feel closer to a fella like being in the trenches at Argonne all over again. So anywho, this senior vice commander-in-chief says outlawing the Communist Party in America is the only way to keep them from infiltrating other groups as front organization.
Not exactly shocking views from the VFW.
I thought so, too. The VFW has been working on outlawing the Communist Party since 1927, when Uncle Joe Stalin took over the Soviet Union. So, anywho, that's that. Oh, one more thing. Since this is a Duluth day, and I was told to do so, this gets a little wordy. A lot of one-syllable words. I get troubled. I have a problem with multi-syllable words. And I was told to do this, or I couldn't get on the air. So here it goes. Something brand new. Flower basket assortments of springtime informal notes at Free Moose in Duluth. Just think. Each package of stationery comes in a frosty plastic bag, bedeckled with the sweetest flowers and daintily tied with lovely satin bows. Excitingly new and different gift idea. In pink, gray, and white for only $1.50. But don't get pink. And Freemus gives S&H green stamps with every cash purchase. And that's that. No, except this. Ding dong, old Joe is dead. Which old Joe? Uncle Joe. Ding dong, the mustache commie's dead. He's gone where Lenin is. Trotsky lives, the devil is. Ding dong, Uncle Joe is dead. He's gone where the commies go. Ho ho, hi ho, hi ho, hi ho. Hi ho, hi ho, hi ho. And that's all the words I can remember from last night, anyhow.
Wow.
Yeah, I know. Pretty good stuff. Believe it or not, we came up with those lyrics in less than an hour. But I can't read the rest on this cocktail napkin. It's smeared with Lenny when Lenny spilt his Rob Roy.
What a waste of a Rob Roy.
So, anywho, gotta get now. The Superior VFW is gonna whoop some radio tail tonight. It's for first place, and the team they're playing stinks.
But you're playing our team. Oh, yeah, right.
Yeah, ha-ha. A little slow on the uptake tonight, huh, McPoodle?
Well, let's enjoy another newcomer, campers and bowlers. Here's Jimmy Dorsey and his orchestra and Soul Rare on the Evening Gather Round Show.
Thank you.
Jimmy Dorsey and Soul Rare on KUWS.
It's getting ugly out there in the hall. The Colonel and Engineer Joe are going nose to nose. It's about the big bowling match. A snarling Colonel and an indignant radio engineer arguing about bowling is embarrassing.
And great radio. Hey, guys, come on in the studio and fight.
Look, mister, you just wait till we head downstairs to see who's what and what's what to do and to whom with said bowling balls, mister, thinks he's so hot.
We don't even have to be lukewarm to beat the pants off of your lousy team. You've never been out of last place. Never. I mean, never, ever. I mean, you're a miracle of slackerdom.
Slackerdom?
Yeah, that's the wait a second. What's that word on the back of your bowling shirt?
Pininators.
Pininators. You mean pinheads?
It's not pinheads, and it's only two N's. I thought I heard you say in-in-in-in-in-eater. Well, you didn't. It's our new name this year, kind of a takeoff from bowling pins and intimidator. And it fits perfectly on our three-color Lounge Master bowling shirts.
Should be more like Timidator. But that shirt is pretty nice, yeah.
Kind of spiffy, ain't it? The dark sleeves on the shoulders hide the armpit sweat.
Snappy looking, yet practical. But it won't help you bowl. Yeah, it won't help you bowl.
I don't need any help bowling.
I don't care what you say. That length could be 2 feet long.
See what I mean, Lou? This is what radio should be all about.
I mean, the only people I like to watch you bowl are the pin set.
Yeah, well, you
because they don't have nothing to do.
I mean, if it's a gutter ball,
they don't have to set anything. Now do it.
Lou, step in any time.
I can't imagine radio shows having people arguing all the time. It's exploiting the basis of what humanity is striving to achieve.
That's why I call it my back-to-the-basis radio format. Okay, guys, Lou's right. Stop fussing. This is Duluth Day and the Duluth Day Show, and you know the rules.
All right, of course. This bowling team argument is sponsored by Frank's Market, where Frank Rizzidlo carries a wide selection of imported Polish hams.
Place your order for Easter now. They have a wonderful beef pot roast, stamped and rolled, U.S. choice at just 49 cents a pound.
I like their sliced bacon.
It's Hormel's Cello Wrap.
Reasonably priced, too.
Yes, 43 cents a pound. My favorite is Frank's Lunch Meats. Mm. Assorted sliced sandwich goodies at just 49 cents a pound.
Ha! T-bone steaks. USS Choice, just 69 cents a pound. Good for the charcoal grill. Oh, and wait. There's more. The Colonel's favorite, Elliot's Meaty Pork Butts. Just 43 cents a pound.
Hey, look, Skinny. I'll make sausage out of you at tonight's bowling match.
Oh, yeah?
That's right.
Oh, yeah?
That's right.
Well, that's Frank's Market at 14 North 21st Avenue West.
They can take a nap. They can take a break. Smoke them if they got them. In Duluth's friendly West End.
This is the second dopiest sounding show that I've ever heard.
You know, I'll work harder on that then. Here are the four lads now and standing on the corner on the Evening Gather Round show.
Standing on the corner, watching all the girls go by. Standing on the corner, watching all the girls go by. Brother, you don't know a nicer occupation. Matter of fact, neither do I. Then standing on the corner, watching all the girls, watching all the girls, watching all the girls go by.
I'm the cat that got the cream. Haven't got a girl, but I can dream. Haven't got a girl, but I can wish. So I take me down to Main Street, and that's where I select my imaginary dish.
Standing on the corner, watching all the girls go by. Standing on the corner, giving all the girls the eye. Brother, if you've got a rich imagination, give it a whirl.
give it a try. Try standing on the corner, watching all the girls, watching all the girls, watching all the girls go by.
Saturday, and I'm so broke. Haven't got a girl, and that's no joke. Still I'm living like a millionaire when I take me down to Main Street and I redo the harem parading for me there.
Standing on the corner watching all the girls go by. Standing on the corner underneath the springtime sky. Brother, you can't go to jail for what you're thinking or for the wolf look in your eye. You're only standing on the corner watching all the girls, watching all the girls, watching all the girls go by.
The Four Lads and Standing on the Corner on KUWS. Now, as part of our special hour-long Duluth Day show, here is Lou Martin with more news from overseas and Duluth. It's brought to you by Superior Television with a new 21-inch receiver from Emerson for just $259. Lou?
Thanks, Tim, and good evening. Russia mourns at Stalin's bier. Ike is ready to meet Stalin's successor, and a napalm blast will test its effects on homes. We begin our world report from Moscow.
This is Moscow calling. Eddie Gilmore reporting from Red Square. It is Saturday morning here. Soviet citizens by the thousands filing past the bier of Prime Minister Joseph Stalin for the last tribute. Lines waiting to enter the beautiful Hall of Columns to view the body extend for miles into the suburbs this morning. Moscow is cold, windy, and unpleasant today, but life goes on about as usual. Hundreds are filing into churches to light candles. There are tears in the eyes of some. Some have grim set faces. Many cross themselves repeatedly. Men, women, and children shuffle slowly into Moscow's House of Trade Unions on Red Square. They enter 15 abreast and then form into columns to climb the steps into the hall where the body lies. This slow procession will continue today, the day after today, and even the day after that. The Soviet Man of Steel, who ruled over a sixth of the Earth's surface and dominated a third of its people, died Friday night, 4 days after being stricken. Stalin lay paralyzed and in a deep coma at the end. Early this morning, a motor hearse left the Kremlin. While thousands assembled on Red Square to see it, the hearse moved slowly to the Hall of Columns, bearing Stalin's coffin. The procession for those wishing to say goodbye will continue day and night until the funeral. A commission headed by Nikita Khrushchev now is working on funeral plans. There is no word where Stalin is to be buried. The Hall of Columns is only a few hundred yards from the great mausoleum in Red Square, where V.L. Lenin, Stalin's predecessor and the father of Russian communism, lies embalmed in a glass coffin. In Moscow, this is Eddie Gilmore.
This is Washington, Lyle C. Wilson, United Press. President Eisenhower took a position of alert watchfulness toward Russia today while expressing willingness to meet Joseph Stalin's successor halfway in the interests of world peace. Regardless of personalities involved, the president told the news conference, the goal of peace must be pursued. A reporter asked if his feeling is one of misgiving or optimism. Weighing his words, the chief executive said, it is one of very definite watchfulness. It was Eisenhower's third news conference since taking office in January, and it produced a third packed house. No, the president does not favor extending the draft from 24 to 36 months, as proposed to Congress yesterday by General James Van Fleet, and there is nothing new Eisenhower can say on the Korean situation as a result of a White House visit from Van Fleet, the retiring 8th Army commander. In Washington, this is Lyle C. Wilson.
This is D.C. Hightower here.
The head of the Voice of America Russian desk complained today that the State Department has refused to broadcast his script, speculating on a possible struggle for power in Russia. Former Red Army General Alexander Barman told the Senate Permanent Investigating Committee his script, rejected last October and again yesterday, would have pounded a vulnerable propaganda point. State officials say news of Stalin's illness is being handled straight, in line with President Eisenhower's order. They say the Voice is being allowed to broadcast balanced speculation about a successor to Stalin drawn from press and radio commentators, but will not indulge in flight of fantasy. It is understood Barman's script is a fantasy in which a group of high Soviet officials are depicted sitting around discussing Stalin's last will and testament. Meantime, President Eisenhower says his administration is studying the question of whether to turn over loyalty files to congressional investigators. He told a news conference certain types of papers should not be exposed, but does not know whether this applies to loyalty records. Chairman Joseph McCarthy of the Senate Investigating Committee has demanded loyalty records of two Voice employees. Former President Truman's directive barring loyalty files from Congress is still in effect. In D.C., this is John Hightower.
This is Alfred M. Schock in Las Vegas. What could happen to your home in an atomic attack may be determined in the first of the spring series of tests starting March 17th. The blast will come before dawn on the big proving ground 50 miles northeast of here and will also find Army and Marine troops dug in for studies on its direct effect on personnel. A lot of questions were not answered by the Atomic Energy Commission's announcement, the exact hour of the blast, which may be televised nationally, the number of troops involved and how close they'll be, and the nature of the explosion, whether a bomb dropped from a plane, fired from a tower, or shot from a weapon. The 1953 program, the third year that the AEC has used the Nevada desert for its continental testing and the second using U.S. troops, has been set up primarily for the Federal Civil Defense Administration. Other things to be observed, such as cars, clothing, and animals, are unclear, but the way in which residents survive will form one of the most important features. Civil Defense has built two typical frame houses with the American Institute of Architects. They will be located at different distances from ground zero, the point directly under the bomb's blast. One, about half a mile away, is expected to be blown apart. The other, about a mile and a half from the center, may suffer some fire damage but should stand, the AEC says, although admitting they can't be sure precisely what will happen. The nuclear device to be used will release energy equal to about 15,000 tons of TNT, a figure which the AEC says is somewhat lower than the 20,000-ton release of a bomb similar to those used at Hiroshima and Nagasaki. Both the houses will have basements of cinder block walls and concrete floors, typical of millions of homes over the country. In such shelters, families presumably would go to seek safety from an atomic blast. Civil Defense and the architects want to assess the chances of occupants for survival. Dummies probably will be used. A variety of bomb shelters of all types will also be scattered throughout the target area. In Las Vegas, this is Alfred M. Schock reporting.
Price controls were lifted from another big block of consumer goods today, leaving only about 3.5% of America's household budgets under ceilings. Price Chief Joseph Freehill says higher prices may result for bread, household appliances, laundry and dry cleaning, and automobile parts. KUWS Radio News Time is 6:40. Tim Michaels has this message from Superior Television on Tower Avenue.
Superior Television has got some great deals for you on TVs, like a fabulous Admiral, 21 consoles, beautiful cabinets from the world's largest TV manufacturer. Emerson 21-inch TV receiver, $259.95. That's, of course, at Superior Television at 916 Tower in Superior. With fringe area compensator, $259.95. Don't forget, Superior Television, 916 Tower, dial 91375 for guaranteed service on televisions. And by the way, this week only is TV Antenna Week. That's right, you can get a TV antenna for $79.95. Install complete labor and parts, best material and television trained workers at Superior Television. Lou?
Senator Hubert Humphrey has urged Attorney General Herbert Brownell to step up the Justice Department's civil rights activities, even if the Eisenhower administration gets credit for it. In a letter to Brunells dated February 24th, Humphrey said, and we quote, "I'm weary of having civil rights be a political football," unquote. One of the chief Democratic backers of civil rights legislation, Humphrey called Brownell's attention to his bill to set up an assistant attorney general in charge of civil rights. It will also train FBI agents to investigate civil rights violations. Philco radio and television research engineer Henry Bone is heading a group of company technicians which has been studying where ultra-high-frequency television stations have gone on the air. He appeared before the Twin Ports Philco dealers in a meeting this week. They're setting up permits of Philco research team study of UHF television in different cities. He gave assurance that the Superior Duluth area will receive excellent reception when station WFTV, the first television station in the Twin Ports, begins telecasting by May the 1st. And that's the news for this historic day, March 6, 1953. Tim?
So long, Uncle Joe, and hello, Pinionators. Think we can take the Legionnaires and that Colonel Rapoli?
My heart may be with the Pinionators, but my wallet is on the Colonel and his devil dog.
Well, Harriet's in next. So is Ray with the sports, and we'll keep a running pin count. The game is underway. The last I heard, the Pinionators are ahead.
So the devil dogs haven't started bowling yet?
No, not yet. Hey, here's a big one from Art and Dottie Todd and Sean Son Demour on the Evening Gatherone Show. And Dottie Todd and Chanson d'Amour on KUWS. Rapid Ray is in with the sporting news. Hey, how come you're not bowling, man?
Because I'm supposed to be, well, I guess I'm supposed to do sports. That's my job.
But you'd rather be bowling.
I know that, but I have to do sports. I've got to do it fast and get back downstairs before they miss me.
You're in the middle of the big match and suddenly you're missing? How does that work?
I told them I had to go to the little boy's room upstairs instead of the one downstairs. I told them I was shy. Hello, fans of the sporting world. East took it to Ashland 61-52 in this late basketball bulletin from Evening Telegram sports reporter Stan May. Stan writes that the Rangy Orientals of Superior East have been crowned the sub-regional champs tonight by snuffing out a surprisingly tough hurdle in the Ashland Ore Dockers at Gates Gym. Advancing to the next class of tournament play, the Orientals will take on the Midgets of Hurley for the regional championship on Saturday. Superior Central Vikings grabbed the consolation title as they whomped to the Northwestern Tigers of Maple 71-44. Next, the Vikings storm the castle of the Eagle River Eagles. Hey fans, I got to tell you, Stan says the Ore Dockers really turned up the heat on the Orientals in the last 2 minutes to make it a nail-biter. But East guard Roger Lowney's defense stopped Ore Docker center John Nyhus with a steal. Then 6'4" center George Nelson sealed the deal with a quick two-pointer. In baseball, hot stove league babble. Talk of moving the St. Louis Browns to Milwaukee is a tempest in a teapot. That from the lips of Browns owner Bill Veeck. Veeck says the Browns will stay in St. Louis for the 1953 season. In Lakeland, Florida, spring baseball camp, Detroit Tigers rookie shortstop Harvey Keene is turning heads and causing tongues to wag. Every Tiger official you talk to, from general manager Charlie Gehringer on down, thinks the 23-year-old youngster from the University of Wisconsin has the makings of a great player. He's even been called a king-size George Kell because he sprays the ball to all fields and fields the ball without any spray. And, hey, from West Palm Beach, Florida, Philadelphia A's manager Jimmy Dykes is bugged by the new American League rule that says you can't argue an ump's call. Dykes says if they want a colorless game, that's what they'll get. The order by American League president Will Herridge says, quote, effective with the opening of the baseball season, any decision involving the accuracy of an umpire's judgment may not be questioned by a player, coach, or manager. Good luck with that, Mr. President. Now, I got to go bowl.
Wait, you're forgetting something.
Oh, right you are, Timmy, my boy. This is Rapid Ray Paulson reminding you that everyone loves a good sport.
No, not that.
What? I can't get away with the going to the Biffy excuse forever. There's only so much you can do in the bathroom.
Well, no, wait. It's Duluth Day, remember?
Oh, Duluth Day, right. Let's see. Stop by the Gold Finds Trading Post for quality at lower prices. Sirloin steaks and pot roast, just 39 cents a pound. Aged Colby cheese, 43 cents a pound. And the margarine Wisconsin loves to hate, all sweet oleo, for 29 cents a pound. Gold Finds Trading Post has free coffee Saturdays, gold bond stamps every day, and free parking for 200 cars at 700 Garfield Avenue, Duluth. See you, King Timothy.
Bowl, Ray. Bowl like the wind, all right? Here's Joe Stafford, and you belong to me on the Evening Gather Round Show.
so alone without you. Maybe you'll be lonesome too and blue by the ocean in a silver plane. See the jungle when it's wet with rain. Just remember till you're home again, you belong to me. I'll be so alone and without you. Maybe you.
Stafford and You Belong to Me on KUWS.
Let me introduce community editor, Miss Harriet Furry.
No time for pleasantries, Lewis. I've got to get back downstairs. It's nip and tuck with those bad old VFW devil dogs.
Are you saying they're not beating us to a pulp?
I wouldn't say that exactly.
Exactly.
You mean we're not being beaten senseless?
So far, we're not embarrassing ourselves.
At least not as much as usual. Unfortunately, Joe just had a rough seventh frame.
Gutterball Gardonio living up to his name again.
He tries, except I wish he'd try harder.
Goodness.
Oh, sorry, Lewis. You can't imagine the tension down there. The community news is proudly presented by Wall's Department Store in Duluth. The last of the telephone invitations are being issued for the Careers in Nursing Institute to be held at the Android Hotel on March 11th. Mrs. William T. Nelson, president of the Superior District Nurses Association, says the institute has a twofold purpose. First, to train nurses and laypeople to give recruitment talks to high school students and adult groups on the problem confronting the nursing shortage, a hobby show in which all the Lincoln School children and parents will take part in is next Tuesday at 5 p.m.
Excuse me, my dear. Aren't you forgetting two?
No time for two. The hobby show will have children and their parents displaying glassware, photographs, antiques, handkerchiefs, paintings, textiles, and guns.
Textiles and guns?
I know. Kind of ridiculous to think that kids would be involved in textiles. Finally, Timothy, when the Superior Business and Professional Women gather Monday evening in the Badger Room at the Hotel Superior, they'll discuss censorship. Franklin school teacher Joe Moline will speak about it from the Army intelligence point of view. You see, Mr. Moline spent 5 years serving in World War II, two of those years with the Military Intelligence Service. Mr. Moline is so interesting. He was the first American officer into Norway when Germany capitulated May 12, 1945. Talking from the newspaper's point of view will be Cinta Westman, who worked as a reporter for the Evening Telegram from 1937 until he entered the service in 1941. Mr. Westman was a lieutenant in the infantry for the 66th Division overseas, and, oh, land sakes, he was a member of the Allied negotiating team that negotiated the surrender of German U-boats on the west coast of France. Mrs. Hattie Johnson and Miss Laura Mackey are in charge of the talk. Now, Wall's Department Store. Oh, goodness, look at the time. They're probably in the ninth frame by now. Wall's has glamour slippers by Gustav, hand-crocheted in the West Indies from metallic latex. They never get out of shape and fit like a glove.
You mean like a slipper?
The glamour slippers are in Wall's hosiery department on the main floor. And on the third floor art needlework department, new for needlework workers, floral or granny Afghan packs. Each pack contains enough yarn to crochet 14 squares. 10 packs, make an Afghan. All packs are 100% virgin wool, moth-resistant, and washable. Just $1.50 a pack at Walls. Bye!
Wow.
Boy, she can move fast when she wants to.
Reminds me of her flapper days back in 28.
Here's Jimmy Rogers and Honeycomb on the super-duper thrilling evening Gather Round show.
Honeycomb, honeycomb. Well, it's a darn good life, and it's kind of funny how the Lord made the bee, and the bee made the honey, and the honeybee looking for home. And they called it a honeycomb, and they roamed the world, and they gathered all of the honeycomb in the one sweet fall. And the honeycomb from a million trips made my baby's lips. Oh, honeycomb, oh, won't you be my baby? Well, the honeycomb be my home. Got a hank of hair and a piece of bone, and made a walking, talking honeycomb. Well, honeycomb, won't you be my baby? Well, a honeycomb be my own. What a darn good life when you got a wife like a honeycomb.
Honeycomb.
And the Lord said, now that I made a bee, I'm going to look all around for a green, green tree. And he made a little tree, and I guess you heard. Whopping, well, he made a little bird, and they waited all around until the end of spring. I guess every note that the birdies sing, and they put them all in the one sweet song. For my honeycomb, oh, honeycomb, oh, won't you be my baby? Well, the honeycomb be my home. Got a hank of hair and a piece of bone, and made a walking, talking honeycomb. Well, a honeycomb, oh, won't you be my baby? Well, a honeycomb be my home. What a darn good life when you got a wife like a honeycomb.
Honeycomb.
And the Lord said, now that I made a bird, I'm gonna look all around for a little old word. It sounds about sweet like a turtle dove. And I guess I'm gonna call it love. And he roamed the world, looking everywhere. We're getting love from here, love from there. And he put it all in a little old part of my baby's heart. Oh, honeycomb, oh, won't you be my baby? Well, the honeycomb be my home. Got a hank of hair and a piece of bone that made a walking, talking honeycomb. Well, honeycomb, oh, won't you be my baby? Well, the honeycomb be my home. What a darn good life when you got a wife like honeycomb.
Honeycomb.
Honeycomb. Jimmy Rogers on KUWS. All right, campers, brace yourself. I just got the word that the Double Dogs rolled over our KUWS Pinionators by a rather killer margin. It seems that we were really in it until the ninth frame when a monumental collapse only a Cubs fan could understand happened.
Why on earth should this be a surprise? They always get pummeled in the Friday night Old Means Basement Bowling League. In fact, it doesn't matter which night they bowl.
Well, you gotta hand it to them. I mean, what sportsmanship, what grit to go back in there week after week with that determination to win. A lesser man would quit.
A smarter man would quit. And I don't think you're right about that sportsmanship thing either.
Boy, you talk about lucky.
I'm depressed, and I never get depressed.
Buck up there, Pete. You had the old junk ball working its magic tonight.
But the JP just straightened out when I needed it to bend.
There, there.
All right, you ladies done crying yet?
And not to be an ungracious winner or anything.
Really, Colonel, the boys have had a rough night. They were so hopeful and happy and giddy.
Yeah, until the game started. And it serves them right for being giddy. I mean, men do not, I repeat, do not get giddy.
Well, we would have won if it hadn't been for my bowling elbow flaring up again.
Yeah. We weren't even at our best game, and we beat you guys.
You were bowling like a bunch of Navy guys.
Hey, you take that back. I'll not have my honor besmirched.
Navy.
Sticks and stones and gutter ball Gardino. Sticks and stones, sticks and stones, sticks and stones. Maybe Lou would have something to say.
So much for sportsmanship. I think it's time for Jack's secret weapon to patch this thing up.
The secret weapon is pretty extreme, Lou. I've never had to resort to it before.
Into the gutter.
I meant to throw on that.
I don't think we have a choice.
You're right. All right, campers and kiddies, hang on to your goodness and sweetness because it's going to overflow.
This song is too much for me.
Ladies and gents, I give you patience and prudence, and tonight you belong to me on the Argue Round Show.
Listen.
Oh, no. It's
patience and prudence.
I know.
Prudence, and tonight you belong to me on KUWS.
You know, you guys don't stink as bad as I think you do.
Let the love fest begin.
Yeah, you know, you're not as appallingly nasty as I think you are.
You know, I'm feeling all warm and fuzzy inside.
I need a hug.
A group hug might be kind of nice.
There, there, Colonel. It hasn't been easy for you, has it?
Nobody, and I mean nobody, understands. Week after week, the devil dogs bowl their best, yet we are hated.
Despised.
Reviled.
Loathed. Detested.
Hated.
I already said hated, Skinny.
Oh.
Fact is, we can't all be Don Carter and be the king of bowling.
But the pressure is great, isn't it, Colonel?
Well, you try to go through life with a nickname of Buster. People expect you to be tough all the time.
Buster? Buster Raffley?
This bowling argument brought to you by King Optical Company in downtown Duluth.
Ladies, get America's most popular ladies' glasses, the golden tone frames.
Styled in an upsweep manner with its exquisitely hammered 12-karat gold-filled trim. It's truly America's leading lady.
You may choose the golden tone from a wide assortment of colors.
The price is only $8.98.
You can pay more, but not at King Optical.
Bifocals, if desired, are an additional $3.98.
King Optical Company, Suite 401 of the Providence Building on West Superior Street.
Open 9 a.m. to 5:30 daily, Monday evenings till 9.
That phone number is 25071.
Well, that about does it for our special Duluth edition of the Gather Round Show. If you've got a good antenna on top of your house, you can enjoy Art Linkletter and Playhouse Theater Television Station KSTP tonight, or join us on the radio for Friday Night Boxing. We'll be back, hey, campers, good Lord willing, and gutter balls turn to strikes. For Lou Martin and the gang, I'm Tim Michaels.
You know, guys, if you think about it, we're fussing over nothing.
Oh, great. He's getting all philosophical on us.
Yeah, that patience and prudence effect doesn't last very long with you, does it, Buster?
I mean, sports and friendly competition. It's all about doing your best, trying hard, making that extra effort, not fearing to fail, not afraid to lose, giving it the old college try.
Sheesh, even I'm getting annoyed.
Oh, come on, guys. Stick with me here. Admit it. It's like I always say, everybody loves a good sport.
Oh, knock it off.
Really?
Come on.
Really?
Give it a break.
You mean no group hug?
No. Get your hands off of me.
Hey, put that out.
You've been listening to Radio Superior 1953, an original production by KUWS Radio and Wisconsin Public Radio. Radio Superior is produced and written by Mike Simonson. Harriet Farrig is played by Jennifer Simonson. Other performances by Duke Skorich, Tom Martinson, Don Hansen, Joel Anderson, Dennis Anderson, John Munson, Bruce McDonald, Kent Vogel, and Pat Kelly. All events reported on Radio Superior 1953 are actual accounts from the Superior Evening Telegram. This is your announcer, Mark Snow, speaking. Good night.